Hey, Rebels. My name is Matthew Barton, and I'm the host of the Rebellion Brewing Podcast. We're in the middle of October. Leaves are turning. The air is a little bit nippy in the morning. I might just have to stop wearing shorts. For all these reasons, it feels like the perfect opportunity to talk about fall beers. And who better to talk about the styles and themes than Rebellion Brewing President and CEO, Mark Heise. So let's get into it. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey. It definitely is getting cooler. I am hate to disappoint everyone, but I'm actually wearing sleeves. But they're sleeves on snazzy cowboy shirts, so still trying to just keep it a little different, keep things rolling.
When I walked in this morning, I was like, did the 70s throw up on you?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
You've got like a gold chain necklace with a lion's face. And you've kind of got like those hunters 1970s style glasses.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. From Specs by Ryan. Great place. Everyone should go there.
Now, two out of two of us are wearing Specs from Ryan.
Yeah, I think there's actually four Rebellion staff all have glasses from Specs by Ryan. Yeah, you know, they got great product, local business. And You run across different people sometimes from other breweries, and you just mesh. You just hit it off. You're just on the same wavelength. And Ryan and us are definitely on the same wavelength. So they're pretty awesome.
And that wasn't a paid advertisement.
It was not. I just wanted to throw that in there.
I think of all the people that could pull off sunglasses that look like that, you might be one of a small handful.
Yeah. So when the pandemic first started, actually. We're just talking about glasses now, but when the pandemic first started back in the spring, I messaged Matt and said, like, what brand of glasses did you get? Cause I knew I was going to need glasses here in the next bit. And you had sent me a web link to, I'm blanking out, but we'll maybe splice something in, but I checked it out and I looked at these glasses and I'm like, those are really cool. And I totally forgot about them. And then I went to Specs by Ryan a couple weeks ago and picked out glasses. And he actually recommended this pair, which was the ones I had picked out as my preferred choice on the web store back in the spring. So
was it Jacques Marie Mage?
Yeah, the Jacques Marie. And these are the Reynolds ones. They did have a Hunter S. Thompson one. But these Reynolds ones, which are more inspired by Burt Reynolds, it's all the subtle differences of 70s references, Smokey and the Bandit, that sort of thing. So yeah.
Do they change color or have a fog on them?
Yep, they do. Yes.
Let's get back on track. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think of fall beers?
There's always just that idea. I mean, everyone gets that similar image. And the beginning of fall is always a wonderful time. Once we get a little further on into fall, it sucks because... Yeah, but, you know, it's that changing of the colors. And so, you know, again, most people's minds immediately turn to red beers, you know, amber beers, something with a little bit more substance, a little softer, but typically, you know, nothing too harsh or aggressive or big and boozy just yet. But you just start nudging that way. And so it's always the first bit of fall is always something to look forward to. And hopefully it is as well for beer.
When I look back at conscious consumption of beer, why do you think it is the way it is when it comes to that kind of lighter fall style?
You know, I think there's just a whole thing about seasonality, about understanding real food and real beers and all that sort of stuff is there's a lot to enjoy and that... you know, even just trying to get that last little bit of like the locally grown corn or pumpkins and squash and all of that stuff. You want to drink that at that time. And so we might talk a little bit more about Oktoberfest specifically, but you know, that's kind of that celebration of harvest. And there's beers that kind of go with that and pair with that. And, you know, Cat's Got the Cream is that one that's, we've just kind of built that up over the years. And, it's about exploring that, you know, there's nothing wrong with having your usual standard that, you know, you're going to just stick with no matter what season is, or rain or shine, that's what you enjoy, and there's nothing wrong with that. But seasonality to me is just part of that whole idea of exploring local culture and food and real things, and they're not always available year round, and that's a good thing.
Why?
Again, that's nature. That's just the course of nature. That's the real world. That's not plastic artificial junk. Of course, can be made perfect and exact 365 days of the year and sold for pennies. But real things take time, and you can't always have them, and they don't always taste the same. And I think that's something we're celebrating and acknowledging and enjoying.
Kind of like you can watch the sunset for a few minutes and then it's gone. It's like, oh, but for that few minutes I was there, it was really beautiful.
Right, exactly. And the sunset in Regina is different than the sunset in Saskatoon or in Calgary or wherever. And so that's exciting, you know, and that's where, I mean, I can just go right in, frankly. Even like, I think the best example of that for us this year is our Solo Crush beer. So we just kind of recently, we had bigger plans at the beginning of this year to kind of this Solo Crush series of single hopped hazy pale ales. And the ones that we have out right now are made with wet hops, you know, picked in Saskatchewan. I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you probably heard the whole story, but we did two different batches, one with Comet hops and one with Cashmere hops, from JGL Shepherd Farms. And like, that is when we talk about celebrating the harvest, like we actually went out and helped harvest those hops and brewed that beer. There is only one point in time that you can actually enjoy those beers, and you'll never be able to enjoy them again. They'll never be the same. You're just capturing, you know, that moment in time. And, you know, obviously we're trying to sell beer, but like, seriously, drink up and enjoy those beers. Sitting on them, I'm gonna save them till Christmas? No, I'm sorry, that's dumb. And again, not trying to be crass, but we have a whole pile of other beers that you will want to enjoy at Christmas. And you'll think, well, this was perfect. This is the perfect Christmas beer. Well, of course it was, because we put thought into that.
I think back to when we went out to JGL Shepherd Farms and we got to walk into the hop fields and smell the aroma coming off the vines. Like, it was really nice. And I kind of have this emotional attachment to Comet, the Solo Crush Comet. It's so good. And I feel wistful because when it's gone, I know I'm gonna miss it, because I just love every time I crack it open and have it.
So when you when you're actually sampling hop cones, you out in a field before they're harvested, you pick them off the vine and you crush them in your hands and you just cup them, and then you smell your hands really quickly. And that the Comet version that we did, I cracked a can of it on Thanksgiving weekend last weekend, and it smells like when I stick my nose into my hands when we were smelling those Comet hops. Like, that is a pretty special, rare thing to be able to get that same quality and aromatics to transfer from when we were in the field to in a can. The Cashmere is good, but it doesn't quite have that same impact. Again, like, it just doesn't always happen. That's a very, very rare thing. I've been to a few different hop yards over the years, and that smell is just unmistakable. It's like lodged into your memory, and it almost never fully translates into the beer, because there's just time, and there's fermentation, and it transforms. And somehow with that Comet, it stayed in there.
The peach, just that aroma, the finish of that little sweet peach tartness at the end, like, it just hits me. Like, I can't wait to have another one.
Yeah, they're really fun beers. And, you know, I think the response has been really cool with customers. You know, in the past we used to talk, I mean, we were doing wet hop beers, you know, we were the first ones to do them. We were growing our own hops at the brewery and making them. And,
You kind of got all the staff together, didn't you? And have like tables and you all picked them by hand. Like, it was hours and hours of work.
Yeah, exactly. And it was fine. And it was fun. And it was great. But, customers didn't really, you know, that was 4 or 5 years ago. I don't think that was really on anyone's radar. And wet hop beers is still a very new thing in Saskatchewan, but you're seeing, but people are like, they're at least paying attention, more attention, and they're like, I better go and try this. And so it's kind of fun to lead the charge with that. I can go all over the map here, but we actually are planning to bottle another newish style of beer. I think some of the breweries have done a little bit of it as well as us, but we actually are going to be bottling a lambic next week, hopefully. So that should be hitting the shelves in the next couple of weeks as well.
Let's back it up. For somebody who's never had a lambic before, what the hell is it?
Yeah, so lambic is people are getting all excited about sour beers. So the original, most of the original sour beers are out of Belgium. And the two main styles are Flanders Red and Lambic. And so we've been making a Flanders Red for quite a few years. We've won awards. It's delicious. It's amazing. But then we also wanted to make a Lambic. And a Lambic is basically a pale golden version for all intents and purposes. It's got a lot more wheat in it as well compared to the Flanders Red itself. But it takes, we've been aging that one for over 2 years in the barrels. It ages in barrels for a long time. So it's a very slow beer to get made that makes it very special and unique and scarce and rare. And so that's why we put it in a fancy bottle for everyone. And then the real common thing to do with Lambic is to add fruit. And so again, to put that great local spin on it, we used sour cherries from Lumsden Over the Hill Orchards. And I love those cherries in sour beers, and it actually gives it almost like a bit of a, you almost get this like additional kind of a cinnamony note. So if you had
from the cherry,
yeah. So if you've had the like Nokomis's Flanders Red with cherries, they use the same sour cherries, and it's just got a hint of it. And it, again, it just adds that additional layer of complexity and interest. And we pulled a little bit of the beer out of the barrels yesterday and had a taste. And I mean, and the cherry character is just so big and bold and bright.
And is that the Satori from Nokomis?
Yes, it was the Satori. I was trying to think, there was Supernaut, but the Satori was the one with the cherries that they did. And so,
I really like that Satori.
It's awesome.
You think it's going to be a bigger cherry?
I feel like ours has a bigger profile. Again, you'd have to ask Jeff how many cherries he used per hectoliter or whatever. We used 500 pounds of cherries in about 1,800 liters of Lambic.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. So I'm really, really excited about it. I'm always kind of nervous when we put out some of these beers like this because Lambics have a little bit of that kind of wild funk. There's a Brettanomyces and other yeast and bacteria in there, which add to the complexity. But if you're used to like what we would call like our kettle sours, so we've got like Blackberry Sour Smoothie is out right now. Those don't have that complexity. We're basically just creating lactic acid in the kettle over a 24 to 48 hour period.
And when you say Brettanomyces, that kick starts a little dying brain cell in the back of my head, the Make It Funky beer.
Yeah.
How is that related to this Lambic?
Yeah, so Make It Funky, if anyone remembers that or had bottles of that, we still actually have some in the tap room, which is kind of why we don't make it anymore, because it didn't sell all that great. It's an awesome Brettanomyces beer. It is funky. That's why we called it Make It Funky. And it's just, and it's not that, you know, people in Saskatchewan aren't worthy. It's just, it's a little, sometimes we're a little too ahead of the curve, if that makes sense. And so we put that beer out and everyone was like, what the heck is this? This is weird. And
it really split the crowd. Like people who loved it and got it were like, 5 stars, love this fucking thing. And other people were like, oh God, what the fuck?
Yeah. So we just decided that, okay, you know, and again, it's not about just trying to create beers that everyone's going to buy. I want to make beers that I love and are truly committed to, but there's I have a million ideas and beers that I love. And, it seems kind of ludicrous to try to ram things down people's throats that they frankly don't want. So, so we had this Lambic and I tasted it this summer and it tasted fantastic. But it really just kind of tasted like Make It Funky with sourness added. And so again, as great as it was, I was just like, I'm not sure this is going to go over so well, but, that's where I got the idea to add the cherries. People love, fruit and fruit sour. I love fruit sours and fruit sours are just, they're fantastic. And it's kind of this beautiful red color. And so
one of the things that you've said repeatedly, and now I circle back to it because I'm tasting more beers, is stone fruit tends to play well, but softer fruits with maybe a little more tart don't. What's the thinking there?
Yeah, so it's always about balance, and with the sour beers, there already is sourness from the beer itself, and so stone fruits just for whatever reason always seem to have just that further depth and more interesting flavor profiles going on. And that just makes it more interesting. Again, not that all berries are, you know, stuff like raspberry has a lot of depth, whereas like a blueberry doesn't really. And then when you get into some of like the super citrusy fruit or tart fruit, like a lemon or a lime, that works. And we make a lemon lime beers. We make lots of lemony lime beers, and we actually have a new one coming out for our anniversary beer. But we typically don't put those into our sour beers because they're already tart enough.
They don't need more sour on top of the sour.
That's how I kind of feel about it. We do that a little bit with the pineapple and the mango, but the pineapple is sweet enough to not get too... again, I'm always trying to think about balance, and balance doesn't mean it has to be equally tart and equally sweet. It's just about balancing it out to bring out all the nuances and interesting flavors in a beer, whatever that might be.
I like that you just said that. It kind of segues into another thought that was kicking around my head. I'm talking with a friend yesterday on Facebook, and he's messaging me, and he's like, I feel so spoiled that I have Zilla as my go-to, because he's like, every time I have a new IPA or something else, I can compare it and come back to it, and I'm like, I've already had the greatest IPA in my life. Yep. And he goes, it's balanced. And that's literally what he said to me. And I'm like, yes, you're there. You're on that journey. You're exploring and you've arrived. I said to him, I'm confident enough that you could put our Zilla up against any other IPA in the same category. And I believe the IPA is going to, like, our Zilla is going to stand up. It's going to hold up.
Absolutely. It always holds up well in blind tastings, which, again, I always keep saying, taste things blind and see which one is the best. And what I love about, again, Zilla is, if you looked at the recipe, it's not balanced at all. There is an excessive amount of hops in it. But we're trying to craft it in a way to just bring out all of that fruit character. And when we're brewing and packaging that beer now, just the hops we're using in it, you can smell that. You can smell the hops throughout the brewery when we're brewing it or packaging it.
It smells amazing. Like, you walk into the brewery and it just punches you in the nose.
Yeah.
And you just want to, like, inhale, you know. Like, it's,
you know, some beers you kind of struggle with, you know, there's some beers that we've been making for a long time, and some you have to tweak or adjust or this or that. And the Zilla is just, again, like I say, I'm when it's on, I'm happy to put it up against any other beer, you know, and it's just always solid, always consistent. And we're, again, you know, in terms of like the history, the short history of what we kind of see of this whole craft beer boom in Saskatchewan is that IPAs are really starting to take off here. And so it's fun to see. It tells me that people, not that IPA has to be the number one beer, maybe Saison will be the number one beer, like, who really cares? But it tells me that people are exploring and adapting and developing further palates, because IPA is typically not enjoyed the first time by anyone. It's just not. They're typically not approachable, if that makes sense. You need some sort of a gateway beer to kind of soften your landing into the world of craft beer. But most people eventually move into IPAs and really enjoy them.
I think, the first time I had an IPA, I kind of recoiled and I was like, oh, what the fuck did you just serve me?
Yep.
And it took me a few months. It took me a few tastes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But now when I come back to the Zilla, it's really kind of my go-to. I don't really want to drink other ones because I'm like, if I'm going to shock my palate like that, I want to know I'm having something that tastes amazing every time.
Yeah. And with the hoppy beers, I mean, we put a ton of work into always making sure we're using as fresh a hops as we possibly can. And when they talk about freshness in beer, IPA is one of the most important ones. So you typically want to drink something that's newer and fresher, but then, you know, the packaging process also really comes into play, and how much oxygen ends up in the can or in the growler, that sort of stuff. And, you know, we do a lot of lab analysis and we're measuring how much oxygen ends up in the can. And that's what really is going to dictate shelf life and preserving hop character in our beers. And so we do a lot of work on that, and we keep a beer library, and we go back and taste different batches and older batches and see how they hold up. And I'm really proud of the work that we do on there because we're still a very, very small brewery. Again, I just relate it to when I got to go to Sierra Nevada Brewing, massive, massive brewery 10 years ago, and they take all that stuff. I mean, that it's like next level, their lab. It's like a whole other building and sensory analysis. But I really wrapped my head around that, and I wanted to see how we could do that at our level. Because there's nothing worse than, you know, we're here talking it up how awesome our beers are, and people go and buy and say, wow, you kind of sucked. That's great that you're talking it up right now. So we want people to have that great experience every time. And I guess I can say, I know that we're giving consumers the best chance possible of getting a great IPA when they buy it off the shelf.
One of the breakout hits from our fall lineup, I feel, was Rhubarb Crisp. I know it's still on shelves, but it's selling out pretty fast. What was the thinking behind that beer?
Yes, we kind of captured lightning in a bottle with that one, really, or in a can, and that was a really cool idea there. I've never been super stoked about using rhubarb in a beer, but people love the idea of using rhubarb in a beer. And one of the great things about Vanessa, one of our brewmasters, is her determination when she puts her mind to figuring something out, because I had no interest in trying to figure that rhubarb thing out. Because it just seemed too difficult. And so it's pretty awesome when she's like, yeah, well, I'll just figure it out. And honestly, it took a couple of years because she's done some test batches, you know, once or twice a year and toiled around. And I remember I can't remember when she did the last test batch, but I remember tasting it and I remember telling her, I'm like, you did it. Like, you figured it out. And I was like, we are going to brew this. And so it was pretty cool. And we timed it right around towards the end of summer to come out. And again, it just kind of scratches that itch and captures people's imagination of what they want. You know, rhubarb obviously is ripe and is harvested earlier in the summer, but you just associate with rhubarb crisp, consuming that, you know, maybe a little bit later in the summer. So the timing was perfect, and it tastes great. And so some people do say it tastes similar to Cat's Got the Cream, which I think is a good thing. I don't think that's a negative. The differences that I can tell you guys, that I'll share with you guys, is obviously there's rhubarb in it, and so the rhubarb really doesn't taste like anything. So again, I laugh at the Untappd reviews where there should be more rhubarb flavor. Like, rhubarb doesn't taste like anything. It tastes like tart. It tastes like tartness. That's it. So the beer tastes tart, so there's plenty of rhubarb flavor, trust me. And and then we use our Mexican vanilla, but it's a clear version of the Mexican vanilla, so there really isn't any cinnamon note in it. But then we do use this beautiful cinnamon that I don't know if Vanessa or Zal sourced it, but we do add some cinnamon in there on its own, and it's just fantastic. Lots of oats for that creaminess. And so Cat's Got the Cream doesn't have the tartness. It's more of a richer caramel flavor, and we're using our original dark Mexican vanilla, which kind of has its own unique cinnamony taste. So it's not the same cinnamony taste, but there is, sure, so there's similarities there. And there is a little bit of vanilla just to round things out.
I love it. One of the other beers I was pretty excited to talk to you about is the return of Hazy IPA, which has kind of been like something we can't keep up with.
Yeah, it's been, I could talk forever about the evolution of Hazy IPAs in general and our initial forays into that. And it's not that easy to make those beers. To figure out how to make them on a bigger scale, on a regular, and just the regular making of them. They require extra hops. We do the double dry hop, DDH, which is really popular term used down in the States, where people are a little more, the craft beer scene is more evolved down there. Everyone knows what DDH means. I actually thought about putting that on our can, and I thought, well, I don't know, no one's going to know what that means.
I remember when we discussed it and I felt it was a little too obscure.
Yeah. So we're starting to mention that a little bit now if you look online. But so it takes longer because you got to dry hop it twice and this and that. But it's just an awesome beer. And when I say like IPAs are not a very good gateway beer, Hazy IPA actually kind of is. Same with the Solo Crush and Golden Crush. they're just a little softer, more fruit forward. We use those terms, you know, hazy, juicy, fruity, delicious. And I think that that pretty much captures the essence of those beers.
The last time I poured one, I was with a friend and I was like, let's share this. It's very acidic. So I have to take it easy because it gives me a little bit of heartburn. It tastes great. I just can't have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like espresso, right? You just want a small bit of espresso. You don't need 64 ounces of espresso. You're going to get heartburn.
Yep.
So I took the can, I turned it over and rolled it gently.
Yep.
And then I poured it out. And my friend was like, well, why did you do that? And I'm like, because it's different kind of yeast and it drops out of suspension sometimes. So you want to make sure you get all that goodness back into suspension just with a gentle roll of the can. You don't have to shake it. I've also noticed, though, that people are confused or they think something's wrong with the beer. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, again, there's been this very rapid evolution of where people want a clear beer. And now, again, people that are more along the evolution of craft beer, now they want everything to be hazy. And so depending on where you are in that spectrum, you may or may not have wrapped your head around what beers are being served and this or that. But yeah, so hazy IPA, a lot of that haze is from yeast in suspension. You're typically adding, again, some wheat and some oats, which also adds protein that can stay in suspension with the yeast. And a lot of hops as well, which is also binding itself to those yeast particles. So there's a lot of things in suspension that end up in that beer. And so, yeah, it can look very cloudy, almost creamy, soupy thick kind of a thing. Maybe that's not the appetizing description for a beer. But no, that's how they look. And some of them can get a little bit clearer than others. It doesn't mean it tastes any better or worse or is less fresh or more fresh. It's just the way things are with hazy style beers. The one thing you mentioned about them being acidic is they are, because again, hops do have a lot of acids in them. What I would mention is, one of the really unique things at Rebellion Brewing is that we, exclusively use, whole leaf hops in our, beers. And whereas most breweries are using pellet hops, and so they're basically pelletized, they've basically crushed the hops. And so when you add those to a hazy beer, again, you make very good beers with pellet hops, but I find that they are extremely acidic because you're literally chewing on hop pellets when you drink those hazy beers. So yes, long way of saying, yes, even our hazy IPA is acidic, but it is far, far less acidic than the other beers that are made with pellet hops.
I remember earlier in the year, I think it was before the lockdown, and we were tasting hazy IPAs from other breweries. And I'm not going to name names. It is what it is. But they kind of had like this woody, barky, bitter quality that was kind of like chewing on.
Like you can literally feel the grit on your enamel, on your teeth.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why it took us so long to make a hazy IPA, I can tell you, was I went on a trip to California, and when we were in San Francisco, we stopped at Cellar Maker, which is hipster, cool, like top of the line craft brewery in downtown San Francisco. Well worth checking out. But that was one of my first experiences with hazy IPAs, you know, and they had like six on their menu. So I'm like, well, I'll try all six. And I had trouble just even getting through the samples because it was just instant heartburn. And I was like, why would anyone ever want to make this for anybody? And so I struggled with that for any time I would go to another brewery and I'd try these hazy IPAs. The heartburn killed me right away. But again, I've come to learn that we can produce one with far less acidity, but still all that juicy, fruity notes. So
without compromising on flavor.
Yeah. So again, I'm definitely bragging and trying to sell beer, I guess. But there really is a legitimate difference in how we make our hazy IPA versus everyone else. Other than Sierra Nevada is the only other one that uses leaf hops.
Which was their hazy IPA? I know they had their Ranger series going.
That was New Belgium. Hazy Little Thing is theirs. And surprisingly, as I mentioned, us and Sierra Nevada are literally the only two breweries in North America that I'm aware of that you exclusively use leaf hops. And if you're really a beer wonk and tracking sales, Hazy Little Thing IPA, the sales are just out of control in the U.S., like just bonkers growth. So
I've only had it once, and I remember it being pretty damn good.
Yeah, and again, I remember the first time I had one probably 2 or 3 years ago, and I was almost like, I'm not sure about this because it's not as aggressive and crazy. But then again, I had to do my research, and I'm like, oh, because it's missing all of that. I'm not chewing on hot pellets. So we get I'm just ranting now, but we get slagged sometimes. Be like, your beers aren't hoppy enough. It's like, well, I'm sorry that it doesn't have that nasty, rough bitterness to it.
The enamel peeling.
Yeah. But I'm just saying I can relate. And sometimes it takes me a while to wrap my head around what I'm tasting and drinking too.
Well, we're in mid-October.
Yep.
We're in the middle of fall beer season. What, you make all these predictions, you try to have a crystal ball. What has surprised you or what was unexpected?
This fall?
Or has nothing surprised you?
I think, what would I say? I don't know if I would say I'm surprised, but it's just been fun this year in particular. We've made a lot of hazy beers, from our hazy IPA to our hazy double IPA to Golden Crush to our Solo Crush, and people just keep buying them and enjoying them, and it's pretty awesome to watch. And then the same with the sour beers. There's a comment on Facebook this week that they said, I thought Rebellion stopped making sour beers. And I'm like, and I said, well, we've made 13 batches of sour beer this year, and we have another 8 coming before the end of the year. That doesn't, and again, it's not that he was wrong. It's just, it's hard to, they literally sell out. They're hard to find on the shelf. And we actually don't even really promote them very much. If you go back and look through our social media feeds and whatnot, we very rarely talk about our fruit sours because they're gone so quickly. And so I guess that it's, again, I'm not surprised because I knew that those beers were gaining in popularity, and I like our packaging and I like the way they taste. I think they taste great. So it wasn't entirely unexpected, but it's definitely been interesting to see that evolution.
Steph was kind of giving me heck because we're sitting in the office and I'm getting ready to post about one of our limited time seasonal offerings. She goes, it's already sold out. It's already out there. Like, there's not a lot left. I'm like, well, we've got to tell people at least once that it's there. So we did. We posted it on social media, but she's like, it's gone.
I mean, we wrote down lists of beers this fall, and I didn't even write down two of them. One of them we don't even have on tap yet because we don't even have growler lines for it, but we've got a beer called Enigma, which is a lighter beer that's been infused with this awesome tea blend from Pluck, which is a great tea blender in Canada. Check them out. And then we also have another one where we took the same base beer and we infused it with some coffee and some lactose. And we call it Blonde Roast Cream Ale, I believe. And we've literally have made zero mention of those on social media. But yeah, there's two other draft-only beers out right now.
I think coffee beers are really, really tough to do well. I'm such a coffee snob that when I have a coffee beer, I have this like image in my mind of how it could be, and it never quite seems to meet my expectations. How do we grapple with that?
Yes, we were talking about coffee beers earlier this week because we did brew it. We brewed a coffee beer this week. It won't be out till probably mid-November. We're just going to, it's going to take a while till we add the coffee and all that sort of stuff. But anyways, with coffee beers, again, it's about really understanding how to get the best flavor out of the coffee beans. And so our approach to our coffee beers, which we've never done full-scale coffee beers, so I'm very excited about this. And hopefully we'll dial it in and get it right.
Me too.
But the theory is that we are actually going to you want to infuse your coffee beans, definitely not on the hot side, but on the cool side, or at least room temperature. And we're not actually even going to crush the beans. Again, it's this whole idea of whole leaf hops versus pelletized hops. When you crush the beans, you're getting more access to more of the oils, but you're also getting access to more of the bitterness and the harshness. And so we're going to keep them whole beans infused, and then you just have to use more. And then you're just capturing all of that beautiful essence of it without any of the harshness. And you get a really bright, bold character, and it lasts for a long time. So that's what we're going for. Fingers crossed that it turns out. I find a lot of coffee beers, it tastes like if you left a pot of coffee sitting out all day and then poured a cup of it. That's what it tastes like. It tastes like dirt and bitter and stale,
kind of flat and heavy, like there's no nuance.
Yeah,
there's a great beer called Porter Joe from Wisconsin Brewing Company, and it really captures that like nuanced, that really rich, warm coffee character in a beer. I think it's one of my go-tos when I go home and visit my in-laws, and that's kind of the benchmark where I think they've really figured that out. And they've got it full time, which is weird because everybody else there seems to be drinking IPAs, but they've got a full time coffee beer.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I'm nervous about putting out a coffee beer. And again, I'm not trying to come across as a coffee snob. Maybe I will, but in Saskatchewan, we're still very behind the curve as to actual good coffee. There's a few people that understand and get, you know, and obsess over it and really learn the science of it, as well as the sensory analysis. And even folks that make great beans here in the province, a lot of the coffee shops that are using their beans are making it way too watery, or it's sitting around too long or whatever. And again, you get a lot of this really like heavy acidic roasts and whatnot, which I'm not a fan of. I don't really want heartburn from drinking coffee. That's not what I'm in it for.
Well, the chemistry matters.
Yeah. So I could almost do a podcast on coffee. I would probably sound very unintelligent, but I'm very passionate about good coffee and bright, smooth flavors from coffee. So we're going to, so that was a long, when I say I'm a little nervous, that's why we've never done a full on coffee beer, because the coffee beer I want to make is going to be very coffee forward, but it's still going to be smooth and enjoyable. And again, I'm also not into the whole double thing. I don't like sugar and cream in coffee. I like coffee, but I also know that most people don't. So anyways, really, like I say, long-winded way of saying I'm not sure what people are going to think.
You know who's really doing it well? Daniela at Dandy's. She did a coffee ice cream, and it was rich and smooth and creamy. I think she balanced it with coconut.
Yep.
And damn, was it good.
I enjoy her coffee ice creams.
Yeah.
They're well done.
And then every time I go in there, I get an ice cream, you know, for the kids and stuff. I'd like a coffee, please. And the staff is really dialed in, really tuned in.
Yeah, we're definitely getting there. So maybe this will be the next step. We can hopefully help play a part in that. Get people excited about good coffee.
Coming out, there's other beers I want to talk about, but I know they're still secret. We haven't launched them yet, so I'm not going to. Oh, I just want to talk about them.
We have such a long list of beers coming out.
What excites you the most? What are you most excited for?
I'm excited about all of them. I mean, that's why we're doing them. If there's a beer that I wasn't excited about, then we shouldn't be doing it. We mentioned Rhubarb Crisp's already out. Cat's Got the Cream is out. People are loving it. I think last year in the office, we said, you know, I think people are done with Cat's Got the Cream. It's run its course, but you know, we kind of get in our bubble and we're not really aware of what's going on outside our quaint little bubble.
And we were wrong as fuck.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's been crazy how we targeted, I think, 8 or 10 batches to brew for this fall. And we looked at it this week. I mean, we're in mid-October and we're like, the brewers were like, we basically brewed all those. And we're like, oh, well, we need this to last till Christmas. So more, please. So that one was pretty neat. The Solo Crush beers are out. We're going to take a little bit of a break on those because we're going to hit you guys over the head with some double IPA coming out. later this year, which again people seem to always love. So again, just to change it up, and then we're going to go back to more of the solo crushes once we run through those. So just a time, we're just going to take a short break from solo crush, but enjoy the ones that are on the shelf right now. They're fantastic. Blackberry sour smoothie is out right now, and then once we run through that, then we're going to switch over to raspberry sour smoothie. I mentioned the cherry lambic that we're going to have. And yeah, I'd also mention, I mean, it's almost coming up on our anniversary, so we've got an anniversary beer as well.
Tell me about the anniversary beer. Why should I be so excited for it?
Well, so anniversary beer, which again, I'm just basically riffing off of what a lot of other breweries have done. They do it's usually a stronger beer, a unique beer. It's something you wouldn't normally do. There's just one batch. There's usually not a lot of consistency. If it's a barley wine one year, it probably won't be a barley wine again. So we did a glitter barley wine 2 years ago, which is awesome. And if you have some, drink that up. It tastes so good right now. The glitter is mostly just kind of dissolved in the can, so you probably aren't going to get a whole lot of glitter anymore. But I thought that was funny. Everyone was all into glitter beers. And so, you know, again, you're... In a way, it's just kind of pandering to just goofy, jokey stuff. And I thought, okay, well, let's put glitter into like a serious, like hit you over the head, strong barley wine. I just thought that was the funniest thing ever. And it worked because a lot of beer snobs were like insulted and really upset with me. And I was like, good. I annoyed the exact people I wanted to annoy with that.
But it still tasted really friggin' good.
And that's what I mean. And that's like, it's like, I don't care. I know how delicious it is. And we just made fun of it. And
What's this year's? It's not a barley wine, is it?
Yes, we did barley wine 2 years ago. Last year, we did a Belgian quad, which we brought back, which also was fantastic. This year, Zal is our other brewmaster. And Zal came up. He really wanted to figure out a whiskey sour cocktail beer and convert a whiskey sour cocktail into a beer. And which again is kind of interesting because I don't think most people in Saskatchewan really have any idea what a whiskey sour cocktail is, or if they've had one, it was probably a sugary sweet version at a chain restaurant, which has nothing to do with a real one. But anyways, this beer is going to be cool. So again, it's got rich caramel notes, which is common in whiskey, big caramel notes. So it's a stronger caramely kind of based beer. He put a hint of smoked peated malt in it. This is not a smoky beer whatsoever. We're just trying to mimic a little bit of oak aging, just regular old oak barrels. They're typically charred on the inside, so you just get that hint of char-ish. So if I didn't tell you that there was peated smoked malt, you may not even know. But it's a very, very small amount in this beer. And then there's some oak. It is aged in some on some oak spirals. And then we're adding a bunch of, I think, organic lemon puree as well. And that's literally what a whiskey sour is. It's literally whiskey, lemon, and a touch of simple syrup. And it's fantastic.
I think it's going to be a really complex beer. I haven't tasted it yet.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be for the mainstream. I think it's going to be for the collectors and the people who like novel beer experiences.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it because I don't think, we're not the first people to make a oaky, strong caramel ale. But I'm not sure many people think of adding lemon to that. That's typically not what you would throw into the mix. And I'm pretty excited to see the reaction. We, again, Zal did do a test batch. It was a lower in alcohol. And I'll be honest, when he said he wanted to do this type of beer, I was like, that sounds terrible. I say that a lot about everyone else's ideas. I should stop saying that. There's a lot of good ideas that people bring forward. I'm like, yes, please do that. So I'll have to start mentioning some of those ones. But I think, again, it's more just my biases and me thinking, like, I personally have no idea how I would make that taste good. And but again, you know, sometimes it's good to let people chase their ideas rather than just shooting it down. So, of course, I just said, yeah, go ahead, brew a test batch. And I remember tasting it. I sat down by myself and tasting. I was like, he's got to make this. This is going to be our anniversary beer. It has to be. There's no other choice.
That's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah. So, again, tasting is believing. So I hope everyone has the same reaction. I would even give plugs, whether it's been mentioned on this show, but the Pints and Growlers podcast that's been out, they've done a whole series lately on, they featured us, they featured Bushwhacker, and they featured Warehouse Brewing. And I really enjoyed those podcasts, really enjoyed listening to them. And I think it's really interesting. And even some of the guests that you've been bringing on, Matt, talking about just Canadian beer scene, prairie beer scene. I never thought that there would be podcasts about our industry and our scene. I never thought we would have a Facebook group that's got, what, 2,000 members? But here we are. And so it's pretty neat, because I remember listening to podcasts years ago about whatever's going on in the U.S. or in Portland or in Austin or something. And now there's podcasts about what's going on in Regina, Saskatchewan, about beer. So whether we had something to play with that, something to do with that, I think so. So feels good.
Well, you gave me a little bit of runway and a lot of rope to kind of hang myself with.
Yeah, exactly, right? And you kind of find your audience. And yeah, so it's just interesting to see that evolution, and that people are wanting to consume and learn more information about some of this weirdo stuff we talk about.
Mark, thank you for your time today.
Yeah, it was great.
Rebels, thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, be sure to join us on our brand new Facebook group page, The Rebellion Brewing Podcast. I'm also proud to let you know that we're members of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. It's a one-stop shop for tons of locally produced shows from across our province. You can find them at the saskpodcastnetwork.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Untappd so you don't miss out on the latest news in Saskatchewan craft beer. Thank you for joining The Rebellion.